Our forefathers and mothers packed a lot of wisdom into some pretty colorful phrases. Without that wisdom, life would definitely be a tough row to hoe. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we'll make hay while the sun shines and talk about colloquialisms with the word maven, Patricia O'Connor. She's the author of Origins of the Specious, Myths and Misconceptions of the English Language, and a number of other books about our mother tongue. In the next hour, she'll be decoding some of our favorite phrases from the past and taking your questions about grammar and other language issues. We also want to hear your favorite colloquialisms, whether you're cock of the walk or as useless as a two-story outhouse. You can call us 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Even if you're running around this morning like a chicken with your head cut off, I hope that you'll take a moment to join our conversation today. We're going to be talking about colloquialisms. Your parents or grandparents may have passed along a gem to you that just has to be shared, and we would love to hear it. My guest today is Patricia O'Connor. She's going to help us decode some of our favorite phrases from the past, and she'll also take your questions about grammar and language. She's the co-author, along with Stuart Kellerman, of Origins of the Specious, which just came out in paperback, and the proprietor of the blog GrammarPhobia.com. You can join our conversation by calling 866-780-9100. You can also send us an email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us your favorite old-fashioned sayings at IPR Talk. Hello, Patricia.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Well, I love these old phrases. My dad still uses a lot of them, and I've been known to throw a few into conversation every now and again. So let's talk about where some of these phrases come from. Of course, all of us have been warned to never buy a pig in a poke, which sounds like complete nonsense, although it's very important wisdom.
Well, it's funny because an awful lot of these old expressions have to do with farming and agriculture. And a lot of them that I'd like to talk about today, like pig in a poke, have agricultural roots, although maybe not in Iowa, because a lot of these have been around for hundreds of years and come from jolly old England. But the pig in the poke is an interesting one because a poke is an old word for a pouch or a bag or a sack, and it's been in English since about 1300. And it was mostly used for people who raise sheep would stuff wool in a poke to transport it to market. But the expression to buy a pig in a poke means to accept something you haven't seen or examined. So if you had a pig in a poke, you wouldn't see what you were getting. And there was actually a proverb that goes back to the 1200s. I will never buy the pig in the poke. And it comes from the Proverbs of Hending, which is a collection of writings from the 1200s. What they meant then was a pig in a pouch.
Okay. And so, but at the same time, we're also warned to never look a gift horse in the mouth. So I guess if we're paying for something, we need to explore it well.
True.
If we get something as a present, we shouldn't check its teeth.
True, true. And you can tell the age of a horse, as you know, from its teeth, by how they're worn down. At least that's the story. So that if you look a horse in the mouth, you're checking it out as to its value. But if it's a gift horse, you probably should just graciously take it and go home.
No one's ever given me a horse, though, so I haven't had an opportunity to test that one out.
No. It probably free horses are as scarce as hen's teeth.
Right.
Which is another one. There are a lot of hen expressions, interestingly, and I think it's because people, even in small villages, could keep chickens. They didn't have to necessarily have a farm. So lots of people had chickens for eggs or for meat or whatever. And the phrase mad as a wet hen, for example, goes back to about the 1820s. And you know that hens that are out in the rain don't like it out there. So mad as a wet hen is an old expression. And as scarce as hen's teeth goes back to about the mid-19th century. That's an American expression, actually. And of course, since teeth don't have, or hens don't have teeth, something that's scarce as hen's teeth is pretty much impossible to find.
Like a needle in a haystack, really.
Exactly, exactly. I'm not sure where that expression originated, how old it is, but we all know that once you drop a needle in a haystack, it's pretty much gone.
Right. Well, and we're also not supposed to count our chickens before they hatch.
Exactly.
We all know that.
And there's always tough row to hoe, which is another agricultural expression, which a lot of people don't realize because they say tough road to hoe, which is a mishearing of the expression. It's not road, it's row, because it comes from farming. You would make a row, you farm your crops in rows. And if a row is tough to hoe, it's got rocks in it, or the earth is hard, or something like that.
And you wonder why you would ever try to hoe a road.
Yes, exactly. Another one is cock of the walk.
Now I used that one with one of my 18 or 19 year old interns. We work with a lot of interns in radio, I was trying to describe someone. I said, "Well, he really thinks he's cock of the walk," and she looked at me as if I'd just started speaking in Esperanto.
Well, you know, these young folks just don't have an idea of these old expressions. But cock of the walk really goes back a long way to about the early 1600s. The walk in the expression is a term for a run, a chicken run, in which the farmer or the chicken breeder or whatever would put the game cock in that run to breed with hens. So and if he had several roosters, each one would have its own walk, so to speak, so that they would have their own areas where they would put chickens in if they, you know, wanted to breed them, or to keep the cocks separate so that they wouldn't fight. So you might have several walks, for example. And the cock of the walk was in a particular walk. You had the hens and you had the rooster. And the rooster knew his place in the world. And it was he had a pretty high opinion of himself.
That's really interesting, because I always just figured it was, I was just thinking about the yard, you know, that you'd have
actually,
a rooster in the yard.
Yeah, actually it was a term, a sort of infrastructure for chicken raising.
Well, that's fascinating. If you have any of these favorite phrases from your own family or phrases that you like to use, let us know, 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Try to make sure they're appropriate for radio usage. One of my favorites is not, so we won't be talking about that one today. But we'd love to hear your favorites, 866-780-9100 or talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And one that is similar to one that I like to use that I'm not going to use right now is useless as a two-story outhouse. And one of my friends recently used that one. I absolutely love that.
I'm glad you brought that up because it turns out that there are a lot of little towns across the country that have two-story outhouses, but most of them are just non-operating site gags. You know, it's just your typical outhouse with two doors and two little moons carved in them. But of course, we know from the laws of gravity that doesn't make a lot of sense. But real two-story outhouses have actually existed, and there used to be one in Oran, Iowa, O-R-A-N, Iowa. So if anyone from Oran is listening, they may know this story, but Oran actually had one. And so did Gays, Illinois. And the way two-story outhouses actually worked was that the upper and lower level holes were not directly in a line. They were on opposite sides of the structure. And there was an inset wall on the ground floor so that the chute next door to that stool was not visible. So that there were actually two chutes.
Okay. Well,
side by side.
It still seems silly, even if it worked. It seems like you just make it a double wide.
But there is a reason for it.
Okay.
The structures that these were once attached to were two-story buildings. In one case, one was an inn that had upstairs and downstairs rooms, and this was before the days of plumbing, so it had a two-story outhouse attached to the side of the building, one for the use of the upper floor tenants and one for use of the lower floor tenants.
Okay.
And there was also a house in Gays, Illinois. I think it was a house, a two-story house. And the house has long been torn down, but they saved the outhouse part.
Oh, that's funny.
And you can see that the...
Well, now I'm going to have to... I just learned that phrase, and I'm going to have to take it out of my vocabulary, because clearly a two-story outhouse can be very useful.
True.
We have Reese on the line from Rockwell City. Hello, Reese.
Hi.
How are you today?
Oh, very good.
Do you have one of these sayings to share?
Yeah. Our family saying was, prettier than a little red wagon running downhill. I've never been able to quite figure that one out.
Well, that's new to me. I've never heard that one.
Okay. Have you ever heard it from anyone outside of your family, Reese?
No, I haven't. So maybe someone made it up. It was just...
I think some of these are inside jokes.
Yeah.
It's certainly colorful, though. I love it.
Yeah.
It's so inside that nobody remembers what it means. So.
Yes. Well, my grandmother used to say, when she was excited, she would say, "Oh, my stars and garters."
Yeah.
And now I can understand my stars. Oh, my stars. Because I think that's not uncommon, or in her day it wasn't. But garters, I don't know why the garters would have been thrown in there.
And why you'd put the two together.
Yes, I know. The celestial and the down to earth.
Well, Reese, thank you so much for sharing it.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
We also have on the line Rob in Davenport. Hello, Rob.
How are you today?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
This is arguably, I guess, politically incorrect. No blue language at all, but is this a more contemporary term? I heard quite a bit. Busier than a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest? Is that...
Never heard that one. But
wow.
He would be pretty busy. You can imagine that he would have to be jumping up and down on his one leg in order to kick.
Well, and I think that one must be a more modern incarnation.
Yes, yes.
Well, Rob, thank you so much for calling and sharing. Today, my guest is Patricia O'Connor. She is the word maven and also author of the book Origins of the Specious, which just came out in paperback. And we're talking right now about colloquialism, some of those outdated phrases that are so colorful and so fun to use. And we'd love to hear yours. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.com. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and my guest today is word maven Patricia O'Connor. And today we're talking about colloquialism, some of those outdated phrases that maybe your grandparents or your parents or you like to throw into conversation to make it a little more colorful on a daily basis. We would love to hear from you with some of your favorite phrases. 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We just got one on Twitter, a common one, but it's nice to be reminded of it. She said that today's conversation is right as rain.
Well, that's, you know, that has obvious agricultural roots, because rain is often very welcome. And so, you know, it's good news to get rain.
Right, at least most summers, not this summer so much, but...
Unless you're haying. Now, there are a lot of agricultural expressions having to do with hay. For example, make hay while the sun shines. So if it's raining, that's not a good time to hay. But there's also roll in the hay, that ain't hay, which it may have first shown up in a Cole Porter song, Always True to You in My Fashion. Should I tell you the lines?
Yeah.
From Ohio, Mr. Thorne calls me up from night till morn, Mr. Thorn once cornered corn, and that ain't hay. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. I'm always true to you, darling, in my way.
So just because it rhymed well, then
yes,
perhaps we put that in the lexicon.
True.
And yeah, hayseed, which is not a nice thing to say about somebody.
Right, a word for a rustic, and it may first have appeared in Moby Dick.
Oh, really?
Yes, Herman Melville. So those are Americanisms. And then there are all the beans colloquialisms, like he doesn't know beans. I don't care beans. It's not worth a hill of beans for somebody spilling the beans. Then there's to be full of beans, meaning full of energy, high spirits. Spill the beans is to reveal a secret is originally American, and I guess it's a little bit more difficult to understand than the others. But obviously, if you're cooking beans, and the beans you're cooking is not something you want to spill. You don't want to let it out, as you would not want to let out a secret.
Well, the not amount to a hill of beans or not worth a hill of beans is kind of interesting to me, because
yes,
I would think that beans, certainly in some periods of time, were very valuable.
Yes, but when that expression came along, let's see, when was that? Tain't worth a hill of beans. It was 1863, and it originated in the South. And supposedly at the time, beans were not very high value in the market. Tain't worth a hill of beans. So I guess it was not a very valuable commodity at one time, at least in the eyes of Southerners. And then there's another one, 1901. He didn't care a hill of beans for no gal. And then actually D.H. Lawrence used it once in a letter. It doesn't amount to a hill of beans as far as I go. So, it's funny. Sometimes the beans are worth preserving and not spilling, and sometimes they're not worth much.
Bill is on the line in Iowa City. Hello, Bill.
Hi. Thanks for having me today.
What would you like to share?
I like the expression mean as a cut snake, and I was wondering if you've ever heard that and if you know the origins of it at all.
I've never heard it.
Okay.
But I do know, this is a little bit grisly, but I know that I mow our grass. I have my own lawn tractor. I don't allow my husband to use it. But when I'm mowing my grass, and I run over a snake, which I once did, I felt very bad about it. But even though I had severed the snake, its parts were thrashing around in the grass, and I couldn't understand that, why it wasn't instantly killed.
Well, I guess that takes...
So that may be... I feel bad about that, because I like reptiles and amphibians a lot, but I was puzzled.
Yeah, well, I suppose
any after it was cut in half,
and any hurt animal is going to strike out. But that also reminds me of another grisly one that we've all heard, which is running around like a chicken with its head cut off.
Exactly. Now, does that really happen? Maybe somebody out there can tell us. Does it really happen that after the chicken's head is cut off, it can run around? That's what I'd like to know. Maybe somebody will call in with direct experience of this.
Well, let us know. I believe that it does, but I've never experienced it personally myself. So maybe somebody will enlighten us.
A tall story.
All right. Well, Steve is on the line, and Steve, I'm going to have a hard time saying the name of your town from Sinsinquam Mound, Wisconsin.
Sinsinawa.
You say it. Okay, you say it.
Sinsinawa.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. As part of the chicken thing, I've seen chickens running around with their heads cut off.
Oh, my gosh.
But I've got an agricultural saying that my father used to spout all the time, nip it in the bud, when he wanted something to be stopped.
Exactly.
Or it got crazy.
That is a very good one. It's very evocative. And I think the reason a lot of these expressions survive is that they're so exactly true to the use that we've put them, to the metaphorical use we've put them, to nip something in the bud. It's exactly what you would do to a plant.
Yeah, that's what I experienced finally, that my actions would cause you to say, you better nip this in the bud before it gets out of control.
Right.
And so I finally figured out, oh, he means I got to stop what I'm doing.
Exactly.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for calling.
Okay, thanks for talking to you.
And you can join us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have a couple that have come in on email that I really enjoy. This one, when my father didn't think of someone's much of someone's mental abilities or sense, he would say, he or she doesn't know enough to pour pee out of a boot.
Yeah, I've heard that one. I've heard that one quite a bit, yes.
That one's a new one on me, maybe.
Now,
did you hear it back when you lived
in
Iowa, or is it a New England thing?
But how would it get in there in the first place?
I don't know.
It's not the best place to eliminate.
No,
but
you would want to pour it out.
Yes, definitely. Have you ever wondered where the expression corny comes from?
Like as corny as Kansas in August?
Yes, yes. Now, corny, or corn-fed, means rustic or countrified, old-fashioned, behind the times, that kind of thing. It's only been around since about the 1930s, and it was supposedly first used by jazz musicians who called a playing style corny if it was outmoded or worn out.
Well, I think that the meaning of that, it's obviously used all the time still,
but I think the meaning
has morphed.
The meaning has morphed so that now if you tell a corny joke, it's just a bit broad maybe or obvious, or it's not very sophisticated. It still has that unsophisticated meaning.
All right, like a country bumpkin telling a joke.
Yes, yes. It would be a corny joke.
Todd is on the line now in Vinton. Hello, Todd.
Hi. I think my dad made it up, but I think it's a good one. Don't ever wrestle with a pig. You get dirty, and the pig likes it.
That's a good one.
How would he use it, Todd? When would he say that to you?
In dealing with people that just aren't worth arguing with.
Yes, and it's so apt because you do get smeared with the other person's, you know, invective, but also he just likes it. He probably likes arguing, and
he enjoys the argument, so it's not worth arguing.
You're just pleasing him by,
Well, we'll have to try to get that into common usage.
Yes.
I think it should be. That's one reason I called. More people should use it.
Definitely. Right.
Thank you so much, Todd.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good day.
You too.
Next, we have Linda in Rockwell City. Hello, Linda.
Hi. I have a couple of them. One was very similar to the boot. My dad always said so-and-so wasn't smart enough to pound sand in a rat hole.
That's interesting.
What pound sand in a rat hole?
Yeah, I always
what does that
wondered,
mean?
Did, you know, would that keep the rat in there? Or is that what you did? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't think I'm smart enough to pound sand in a rat hole. I have no idea why I would.
Well,
I can't think that it would work, though. We've tried stuffing rocks down mole holes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to work.
No. He had another one that I don't know whether he made it up or what, but when he was getting angry with us as kids, he would say he was going to cloud up and rain all over you. And we never knew exactly what it meant, except that it was time to switch behavior.
Oh.
So
whatever it was bad.
It was bad, yeah.
Yeah.
And then my grandmother, who grew up in the 1880s and 1890s, once said to me, somebody made me a dress, and I was worried that the hem was even all the way around. And she said, it'll never be noticed from a galloping horse.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I was very much into horses, and I thought that was really neat.
Yeah,
but,
cool.
Evidently, it's not something that's going to be noticed unless you're really looking.
Even though I can just see my daughter spitting that back at me. Mom, I'm not going to ride horses.
Yeah.
But it worked for you. Did it make you feel okay about the dress?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Linda.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's a good one from Joel in Des Moines. He says, in my family, there was a saying, you'd complain if they hung you with a new rope. I'm not sure exactly what it meant.
You know, it might even be worse being hanged with a new rope.
Well, I can't imagine it could be that much worse. Hanging sounds pretty bad
itself. It sounds pretty bad anyway.
But he also had a similar one to the one-legged man comment that we had earlier, and that was busier than a one-armed paper hanger.
Oh, geez. Now that would be tough.
Absolutely.
Yes.
We have Chris on the line from Davenport next. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Hi there.
My great-grandfather used a couple of them that I thought he made up, but I actually heard someone else say once. And one of them was, if he liked something, he would say, boy, that's ace potatoes.
Ace potatoes?
I think ace was a word that it was just dead on, but potatoes was something that he really liked. So if you add potatoes, I think it meant he really liked it. And then the other one that he had was...
And is that the one that you heard somebody else use?
I did.
Wow.
And it really surprised me. And I said, where did you hear that? And they said, they've always said that.
Huh.
The other one he used to say was, if something he didn't believe would sell very well, he'd say, well, that would sell about as well as a jar of pickled mustache. And I don't know where he got that or what he meant by that. That one I never actually heard again, but that he used to say. Boy, that'd sell about as well as a jar of pickled mustache.
So, Chris, do you ever work these into your own conversation?
I've never been able to use the pickled mustache one quite correctly, but potatoes I do say from time to time.
I think that would tend to cause the conversation to come to a halt.
I would think so.
People scratch their heads.
It'd be a good way to change the subject.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Chris.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 866-780-9100. Russell is on the line from, is it London, Kentucky?
I live in Kentucky, but I'm driving a semi right now on I-80 here in Iowa.
Oh, great.
And here's one for you now. The way back in the days, the old folks down there where I live at used to say this about a hyperactive kid. Everybody has a hyperactive kid in the family. They say that kid is so hyper, reminds me of a dog covering fleas, ain't got no legs to scratch himself with.
Oh.
And yes, chickens do run around after you chop their heads off.
They do.
Yes,
how can they do that without brains? I mean, without a brain stem.
Well, that's the whole thing. They don't run in any given direction. That's why they use
that. Right. They just flop around, flapping their wings. It's a nervous twitch, just like a dead body. A dead human sometimes will twitch after they've been dead for a little bit. You know, their adrenaline's so pumped up, they're so excited when you grab them, they're scared, and you chop their heads off to eat them, then they just, when they hit the ground, they'll take off running. That's the reason why most times nowadays they'll tie their legs, and then they'll lay them on the stump and chop their heads off. Or my granny used just to pick them up by the neck and wring them around like a bull whip and snap their necks.
Oh, my.
Well, Russell, before I let you go, say your colloquialism again, because you will say it so much better than I would. So the boy is more hyper?
Than a dog covered in fleas, ain't got no legs to scratch yourself with.
That's terrific. Russell, thank you so much for your call.
Bless you, ladies. Have a good day.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, and Mary Jean is on the line from Iowa City. Hello, Mary Jean.
Yes, my grandmother had many of these sayings. In fact, my husband calls them cananisms, which was her last name. But the most common one we use in our family is if you're going someplace, don't go with one arm as long as the other.
Don't go with one arm as long as the other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. How does that work?
Meaning if you're taking food someplace.
Uh-huh.
You're going to be carrying something, a basket or the food.
So I see. So you're holding it up.
One arm is going to be shorter than the other.
Oh, I get it.
So always take a gift or something for your host. Is that what it means?
Oh, yes. Oh,
or
okay.
Or if you're going for a meal, take something, and don't go with one arm as long as the other.
Yes.
Don't go with nothing
in hand.
Don't
go empty-handed.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Don't go empty-handed.
Oh, that's a good one.
So, and there was others like, if she saw somebody, like her husband talking to somebody, well, who are you how doing? Yeah. And when we were kids and we'd be helping putting vegetables up and we'd be complaining, she'd say, this is going to taste better than snowballs in January.
Oh,
I like that.
So, and if they want us to get moving, here's your hat, what's your hurry?
Oh.
And one last one, if there was someone that they felt didn't have much, they'd say they don't have a pot to pee in or a window to throw it out of.
Oh, yes, I've heard that.
She sounds like she was quite a lady.
Indeed.
All right, Mary Jean, thank you so much for your call.
Bye-bye.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio, and today we're talking with our word maven, Patricia O'Connor. We've been talking about colloquialisms and old sayings, and we would love to hear yours. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can call in with your grammar or language questions as well. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and with us today is word maven Patricia O'Connor. She is the author, along with Stuart Kellerman, of Origins of the Specious, which just came out in paperback, as well as a number of other books about language. She's also the proprietor of the blog GrammarPhobia.com. And you are welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have a lot of emails coming in. Donna in Webster City sent this one. She said, my mother-in-law used many of these expressions, but the one I remember most was God willing and the creek don't rise.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that a lot. Not for years, but yeah, that's a good one.
And that one makes perfect sense.
It does.
Here are a couple of phrases D wants to know about, and if I didn't give you prior warning of these, so we may have to do some research and figure it out later. Mm-hmm. But D says, here are two phrases I've heard and used, but I've never known the origin. In like Flynn, mm-hmm. and run like Billy Ned.
Well, run like Billy Ned, I can't tell you about. That's new to me. I've never heard it. But in like Flynn, there's a popular myth about that one, that it's a reference to Errol Flynn, who in the late 30s or early 40s was, and this was a very infamous case, he was charged with statutory rape after a date he had with two underage girls. And he actually he wasn't convicted. So the idea was that he, you know, he got away with it. And Flynn himself wrote in his autobiography that his trial and his acquittal were the source of the expression in like Flynn. But he was mistaken in that, because it was around long before his trial. It was around in the earlier 1930s. It was used during the World's Fair. It was seen in print during the World's Fair. And also, there's been some speculation that it may have been a reference to Boss Flynn, the political boss of around the World War I era. But it's never been completely tracked down, and that's true of a lot of expressions, that you can track them back only so far, and you reach a dead end. The same is true, for example, of the expression "whole nine yards," which my husband and I wrote about in our book Origins of the Specious. There's a popular myth that it comes from the length of an ammunition belt in a tail gunner's ammunition belt during World War II. actually, that's never been proven one way or the other. There are all kinds of other theories that have been disproven, that it's the capacity of a cement truck is 9 cubic yards, or that a Maharaja's sash is 9 yards long, and I could go on. Funeral shrouds, nuns' habits, it goes everywhere. But that's never been adequately pinned down, whole 9 yards.
There was another one that you wrote about in your book that I found really interesting, because I'd heard it a lot growing up, and I thought it was another one of these rural comments, honestly, which was, there's not enough room in here to swing a cat. And I always wondered where on earth that came from, but that's not an agricultural saying at all.
No. It was known in Shakespeare's day, actually, and it probably... And this is a gruesome etymology. I'm sure there are animal lovers out there that would rather not hear this, but it probably comes from a medieval practice of putting a cat in a bag or pouch and hanging the pouch from a tree so that the struggles of the cat would make the pouch swing back and forth, and that archers could use it as target practice.
Oh,
I know, isn't that awful?
That is terrible, but
yeah.
It's
so
interesting.
To swing a cat meant to use something as target practice. I'm sorry.
Certainly that's one of those phrases that has changed over time. We got another email with somebody else who said that their parents used to use the expression, you'd gripe if they hanged you with a new rope, but they also like to say, you'd gripe if your ice cream was cold.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is nice. I love these ones that come from families. Like the first one that we heard today about, as pretty as a red wagon running downhill or rolling downhill. A friend of mine sent me one. He said in their family, when they have to make a decision, instead of saying, well, you think it over and let me know, they say, you pull the cow's ears and let me know what you decide.
How strange.
And he told me where it comes from, because they live on the farm, and when a cow's ears are too cold, apparently that's a sign of fever. So they would pull the cow's ears when they were trying to decide if they should call the vet or not, and now they just use it whenever they make a decision.
Yeah, so they were just feeling the ears, more or less.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Huh. My goodness. But, you know, another agricultural one is sort of misogynistic, because it's no spring chicken, which has been around since the 19th century, the early part of the 19th century, and it's still common today, but it meant it was in reference to a woman. And a spring chicken was a chicken hatched in the spring, still young. So to say someone was no spring chicken meant she was no longer young. But that was never used for men. You never heard it used as, he's no spring rooster.
Well, fortunately, in modern usage, probably a lot of people forget that chicken is supposed to be gender specific.
Yes. But still, even though today a lot of people don't recognize chicken as a female animal, they still don't use no spring chicken to refer to a man. And
right.
I guess it's because it's okay for men to get old, but not women.
That very well could be. Betty from Cedar Rapids sent in when she said, my father-in-law used to say, that's enough to make a sow eat her pigs.
Ooh.
And they have a corollary to that, which is, we wouldn't let this person, she says, usually a musician, anywhere near the hog house. I'm sorry, that's from Daryl. I mixed up two of my emails, but we wouldn't let him or her.
A person near the hog house?
Right, right.
Huh. I guess, is a person supposed to be a thief? Or?
I guess so. I guess musicians are not to be trusted. Dick is on the line from Gilbertville. Hello, Dick. Hi, Dick. Are you there? Oh, let me put you on the air, and that'll probably help. Hi, Dick.
Okay. Hi. Love your show. One of the things I love sometimes is that one that kind of confuses people and makes them look. You can lead a horse to water, but a pencil has to be led.
Oh, I had to think a minute. Okay, that's good. A play on words.
Yes.
That's wonderful. That reminds me of a Dorothy Parker saying. I won't finish it, but I shouldn't even start.
Yeah, most of hers were not very clean.
I have to hold myself back from that.
Yeah. But also, you know, an awful lot of sayings attributed to Dorothy Parker were actually said first by someone else. And I think you could make a whole collection of fake Dorothy Parkerisms.
I'm sure you could. It's kind of like Yogi Berraisms.
Right.
I'm sure
things that Yogi actually didn't say,
right,
but that a lot of people think he did. Right.
All right. Dick, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
We have another one by email. This is a really interesting one. My grandpa always said that the only way to get yourself really clean was to wash as far down as possible, then wash up as far up as possible, and then wash possible.
That's a good one. That reminds me of a childhood memory when once my grandmother was babysitting for me. I was very small, and she put me in the bathtub to take a bath. And I wasn't so small that I couldn't be left alone, but she said, "You go ahead, and I'll check on you later." And so I'm in the tub, and after a few minutes, she calls out, "How are you doing?" I say, "Fine." She says, "Where are you now? What part of you are you washing?" I said, "I'm washing my feet." She says, "Oh, good, then you're all finished." I said, "No, I just started." And she laughed and laughed and laughed, and I couldn't figure it out. But she felt that it would have been better for me to start at the other end and wash down to my feet rather than start at the feet and wash up. But who knew?
I'm sure you washed possible by the time you were done, though.
Right.
Mark sent us an email from Cedar Rapids, and he says, the phrase I had not heard until a few years ago was, whenever it would rain and the sun was shining, the devil was beating his wife.
Oh, how interesting.
That is an interesting one. I've never heard that one before.
Another misogynistic one.
And this right, this next one is really good, though. He said, one that's not so graphic is one from my dad's family that referred to everyone finding a mate as there never was a crock so crooked that there wasn't a lid to fit it.
Oh, that's a good one. I kind of like that.
That's very hopeful.
A crock so crooked. Back in the days when everybody had lots of crocks sitting around the house for butter, for holding commodities in and all that stuff.
That's great.
That really has a flavor of the farm about it.
And it's kind.
Yes. It's kind.
Many of these are not.
Many are not. Most aren't.
Right. Paul is on the line in Davenport. Hello, Paul.
Hi. Well, my dad handed down a couple to me. One was slower than a one-armed paper hanger.
Those one-armed paper hangers get a lot of attention.
Right. We've had that one before, yeah.
And the other one is referring to something that's really slow moving. It's about as fast as watching grass grow or paint dry.
Mm-hmm. Or molasses run in January.
Right.
Yes, I've heard that one.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, Paul, thanks for calling.
You bet.
We have a couple of other ones that have come to us from Twitter, or at least one. This one is as nervous as a cat in a room full of rocking chairs.
That one I've heard too. I think I heard that one in my childhood.
Alan is on the line in Webster City. Hello, Alan.
Good morning.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I'm wondering if your guest has heard of Richard Mitchell, who called himself the underground grammarian.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, and he had a phrase that I've remembered. I read his books maybe 30 years ago, but he said, words are misused into usage.
It's true. It's very true. A lot of the common usages of today were considered slang or bad grammar or something like that in the 19th century and earlier. For instance, it used to be a slang word to say someone was cute, C-U-T-E, cute, because cute started out as a shortening of the word acute, which meant sharp. And cute was to mean pretty in a quaint or dainty way was slang. But that's true of so many, many words. So he was very right.
And then we have a thing in my family. My oldest daughter started it. It's called Toothless Friends. And that's sort of a slam on, say, your little sister's friends who are really obnoxious.
Oh, meaning that they're very young? Or
it started out when her younger sister's friends were starting to lose their baby teeth. And she talked about Jen's toothless friends. Well, now we still use that, and she, even though her sister is 31 years old, she still talks about her toothless friends.
Oh, my gosh.
And I use it when my wife goes out with three of her friends, and I just call them Karen's toothless friends, and the girls know what I'm talking about.
So you have a lot of contempt for all of your family members.
It's not really contempt. It's more of a gentle slam.
Yeah, and I would think it was a reflection on their immaturity, maybe.
Yeah.
That they were losing their baby teeth.
But over the years, the phrase has changed its meaning slightly. It's become kind of a gentle, teasing way of saying, well, yeah, I put up with your friends, but I'd rather not be around them or something like that.
Right, right.
And then something my mother always said, I remember when I was growing up, and she'd use one of the seven words you can't use on the radio, but then she'd say, pardon my French.
Oh, yes, pardon my French. Yeah.
Alan, thanks a lot for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Have a great day. And probably time for one more call. Pat on the line from Des Moines. Hello, Pat.
Hey, thank you. This is a fun show. Brings back a lot of memories. When I was growing up, I heard often my parents say, man, they have a memory like an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know where that came from?
Well, I think it comes from the reputation elephants have of never forgetting anything, which is actually a well-earned reputation because they do have excellent memories. And supposedly a dying elephant will remember where it's where the Indian burial ground is and will be able to find it even after maybe not having been there for 50 years or something. But they supposedly do have very long memories. So a memory like an elephant it's not really such a metaphor. It's actually a literal expression.
And quite a compliment.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your call. And we have an email that I want to leave you with today, Pat, and that's from Terry in Davenport. He says, two that I use often are, there are no pockets in a shroud, meaning you can't take it with you.
Yes, I've heard that one.
I like that one a lot.
Yes,
and
yes.
Then also, if something is very, very expensive, it might be higher than a cat's back.
Oh, that I haven't heard.
Very evocative, though.
Yes, yes.
Patricia, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Patricia O'Connor is the author, along with Stuart Kellerman, of Origins of the Specious, which just came out in paperback. And she's also the proprietor of the blog GrammarPhobia.com. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa available at all times at iowapublicradio.org. And you can always send us email. Maybe you have a colloquialism you just have to get off your chest still. Let us know. talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, novelist Sarah Gruen on her new book, Ape House. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.